Revelation, an Overview by Robert C. Newman. Concerning the outline of Revelation, there's considerable disagreement on how to outline the book at its broadest level. We're going to follow George Ladd's suggestion. There is general agreement on how the book is structured at the next level down, for instance, letters to churches, the seven seals, and so forth. Here's what Ladd's structure looks like. He has a prologue, verses 1 through 8, and that's pretty standard, and then from 1:9 to 3:22, he calls that the first vision, the present. From 4:1 to 16:21, he calls the second vision, the future. From 17:1 to 21:8, he calls that the third vision, the end. And from 21:9 to 22:5, he calls that the fourth vision, titled the beginning. And then an epilogue, 22:6 through 21. Prologue and epilogue are fairly standard. The unusual feature, perhaps, of Ladd's structure is where he sees a reference to John being in the Spirit or carried by the Spirit, something of that sort. He starts a new vision with that. And then his labeling, the seven churches and such being the present, then when John is called up into heaven, that's the future. When John is called into the wilderness to see the harlot, that's the end. And when John is taken up onto the high mountain to see the New Jerusalem, that is what he calls the beginning. And the idea that the present, the future, the end, the beginning, perhaps comes from C.S. Lewis's remark in the last volume of his Narnia Chronicles, where one of the characters is told, this is not the end, this is just the beginning, thinking of eschatology then as looking at the new beginning. Well, the first vision, the present, begins with the vision of the glorified Christ, chapter 1, verses 9 through 20. And then his letters to the seven churches, verses 2:1 to 3:22. The second vision consists of more subdivisions, as many more chapters. The heavenly throne room in 4:1 through 11, the seven seals in 5:1 to 8:1, the seven trumpets in 8:2 to 11:19, and then an interlude. Just as there is a interlude, a very short interlude between the sixth and seventh seal and between the sixth and seventh trumpet, so there is a big interlude, 12:1 to 14:20, in the midst of the seals, trumpets, and bowls sequence, and then in 15:1 to 16:21, the seven bowls, and there's no interlude between the sixth and seventh bowl. The third vision, the end, Babylon destroyed, 17:1 to 19:5, final victory, 19:6 to 21:8. The fourth vision, the beginning, the New Jerusalem, 21:9 through 27, the River of Life, 22:1 through 5. Well, let's go look at those a little bit more detail here. On the seven seals, 5:1 through 8:1, the scroll and the Lamb, 5:1 through 14. We get the picture in heaven of the throne room scene and the Lamb shown there, and then the Ancient of Days has this seal, has the scroll in his hand, and who is worthy to open the seals of the scroll, and John begins to weep because there's no one found worthy. And then he is told to look, the Lion of the tribe of Judah has conquered to open the seals. And he turns and sees not what we would have expected, a lion, but sees a lamb that has been slain. And I think the implication there is that Jesus, by his atoning death, has qualified to open the seals of the book. What is this book? A lot of argument about that. Probably the simplest sort of thing is it's perhaps the program of salvation history, and Jesus, by his atoning death, is able to set in motion the events that will lead to the end, the culmination of salvation history. In 6:1 through 17, the six seals are opened, and that begins with the four riders coming forth on the different colored horses. I might mention that a number of the pictures we're using here are by Pat Morvinko Smith, who has some excellent illustrations of various features of the Book of Revelation. We then have the seal interlude, in which the two multitudes are introduced, 7:1 through 7:17. One of these is the 144,000 from the 12,000 from each of the tribes of Israel, and the other is the innumerable multitude, 7:9 through 17, from all the nations of the world. It certainly looks like two multitudes to me, though some commentators argue it's two different perspectives on the same group, namely the church. Well, I wouldn't immediately throw that out, since obviously the picture of Jesus as the lion conquering and the lamb who has been slain are two different perspectives on the same individual. But my inclination still is that we're looking at two different multitudes here. Finally, the seventh seal is open in 8:1. The seven trumpets bring an additional set of judgments, if you like, coming upon the earth. I think there's merit to thinking that the seventh seal is the seven trumpets, and the seventh trumpet is the seven bowls. You'll need to think about that. However, seven trumpets, 8:2 to 14:20, the trumpets prepare to sound in 8:2 through 6. Six trumpets are sounded in 8:7 through 9:21. Then we have the trumpet interlude, the appearance of the two witnesses and their testimony, apparently Jerusalem in connection with the temple and such, 10:1 through 11:13. And then the seventh trumpet sounds in 11:14 through 20. The second vision interlude, 12:1 through 14:20, begins with the dragon, the woman, and her seed, 12:1 through 17, followed by the two beasts that some suggest are the other two members of the satanic trinity, if you like. The dragon himself represents Satan, and then the two beasts represent the Antichrist and the false prophet. Obviously, again, because of the diverse treatments of the Book of Revelation, there are other alternatives that have been suggested for this. 14:1 through 20 gives the 144,000, presumably the same 144,000, the three angels with their activities, and the two harvests. Then in 15:1, 16:21, we have the seven bowls shown here, the angels carrying the bowls. They do appear to be bigger bowls than just vials, as the KJV goes with. The KJV translators basically just transliterated the Greek phiali, but if you look at Old Testament usage of that in the Greek translation of the Old Testament, it's the bowls that are used to catch the blood and sprinkle it on the altar and that sort of thing. The bowls are prepared in 15:1 through 8, and then the bowls poured out 16:1 through 21. One might suggest that the bowls represent the accumulated blood of the saints, which in some sense, in being persecuted, in being martyred, have functioned as sacrifices, as offerings, and now as God brings his judgment, that blood is going to be poured back on the earth that has caused this persecution, that has conducted this persecution. 17:1 through 19:5, Babylon is destroyed. We have the woman on the beast, 17:1 through 18. I have a paper, I think it's probably on our website somewhere else here, on Greco-Roman symbolism in the Book of Revelation. And one of the striking things is that the woman on the beast doesn't seem to have any Old Testament background in that particular form, but it would have had a very strong Hellenistic background, and that is Europa riding the beast that is Zeus disguised. And here we see the back of a 2-euro coin where the European Union, formerly European Common Market, is displaying visually that that Greek myth of Europa, and this seems to be a Greek €2 coin, though you can actually see in Greek Europe written there on the left-hand side. The woman on the beast, 17:1-18, and then the judgment on the city, 18:1-19:5. Final victory, 19:6-21:8. The Marriage of the Lamb, 19:6-10, Christ's Second Coming, 19:11-21, the Millennial Rule, 20:1-10, and the Last Judgment, 20:11-15, we can call it the Great White Throne Judgment, and then the New Heavens and the New Earth, 21:1-8. Well, that's the end of our tour here, not counting the epilogue, which we mentioned earlier, but didn't come back to deal with in detail. What practical applications do we find in the book of Revelation? Well, we suggest some of these possibilities. Worship is one thing. There's more emphasis on worship in this book than any book of the New Testament, that we need to realize that God is worthy of our worship. And we see a great deal of that in the book of Revelation. Persecution is another big feature here. Believers can expect to face persecution in this world, especially at the end. And thirdly, future hope. Here in Revelation is the clearest picture of the hope which believers have, which should motivate us to serve God.